This audio is produced and distributed by the Christian Biblical Church of God, Post Office Box 1442, Hollister, California, 95024-1442. For the Canadian office and offices overseas, listen at the end of the message, please. To visit our websites, they are cbcg.org and biblicaltruthministries.org. Where are we in prophecy, and where are we in relationship to the return of Jesus Christ? And what things do we need to look to and see what's happening today? Because if there's any one thing that is true, we are living in the end times. Now, someone sent me a book and said, I don't see how the United States can be Israel in prophecy, that is, the descendants of Joseph, Ephraim, and Manasseh. See, most people think that the house of Israel are the Jews, the one tribe of Judah plus a few Levites. And they don't understand about the 10 tribes who are supposedly lost, because the Jews say that the 10 tribes were absorbed into the Gentiles, therefore they no longer exist. Which is not true if you know and understand history. And so this person sent me the book saying, well, the United States is Babylon. And I came to the conclusion that no, it is Israel Babylonianized. That's what we are really dealing with. Now let's go back and see some of the promises that God gave, and then we will see what happened to Israel after Solomon completed the temple. Now let's turn to Deuteronomy 28. And while we're going to Deuteronomy 28, let's just review that the blessing given to Ephraim and Manasseh in Genesis 49 shows that they would be the leading nations at the end time, that is Britain and America. So here in Deuteronomy 28, we have the blessings and the cursings given to Israel. Now that's all 12 tribes. Now this is, we have to understand that the covenant given to Abraham was unconditional. Meaning that, in spite of the behavior of the offspring, the blessings and prophecies would happen. So what God did in giving the covenant to Israel, the covenant of the Old Testament, he made it conditional. Okay. Now, let's begin Deuteronomy 28 and verse 1. We'll see it's conditional. And it shall come to pass if, whenever there's an if, that means it's conditional and there are choices. You shall hearken diligently unto the voice of the Lord your God to observe to do all his commandments, which I command you this day, that the Lord your God will set you on high above all the nations of the earth. And we will see that that happened during the days of Solomon. And it also has happened in the end time because of the promise given to Abraham that it would be. And all these blessings shall come upon you and overtake you if you shall hearken unto the voice of the Lord your God. Now, when people look to the promises of God, what do they want? You look to the promises of blessing, don't you? But there are other promises of God which are not blessings. So you can read all the way down here, all the blessings it would be. Let's just pick it up here in verse 11. And the Lord shall make you plenteous in goods, in the fruit of your body, the fruit of your cattle, the fruit of your ground, in the land which the Lord swore unto your fathers to give you. And, of course, America is part of that land which he swore to give to us. And the Lord shall open to you his good treasure, the heaven to give rain to your land in his season, and to bless all the work of your hand. And you shall lend to many nations, and you shall not borrow. And the Lord shall make you the head and not the tail, and you shall be above only, and you shall not be beneath, if that you hearken unto the commandments of the Lord your God, which I command you this day, to observe and to do them. And you shall not go aside from the words which I command you this day, to the right hand or to the left hand, or to go after other gods and serve them. So there are all the blessings. Now notice, all the blessings are contained in 14 verses. In verse 15 are some of the promises which are the cursings. Let's notice those, verse 15. It shall come to pass if you will not hearken unto the voice of the Lord your God to do all his commandments and his statutes which I command you this day, that all these curses shall come upon you and overtake you. So then he lists every one of them. Now let's come to the conclusion of the matter here. Let's come to verse 43. And let's see what is happening today. Why do we have so many immigrants coming into America, to Britain, to France, to all of the Israelite nations? Why is that taking place, but especially in America? Let's read it. Verse 43. And the stranger that is within you, that is within your gate, shall get up above you very high, and you shall come down very low. Well, now we're about halfway there. I remember I called a government agency. I forget which one it was, but it was U.S. government. And I got this person on the phone. I couldn't understand her. So I asked her twice to please repeat what you have to say. And in exasperation, I said, don't you have someone there who speaks English? You know, here representing the United States government, you see. Well, now, you will see that more and more and more strangers are coming in, more and more and more. They're getting the ascendancy. As a matter of fact, in Santa Clara County, the Anglo-Saxon whites are outnumbered by all of the so-called minorities. Now let's notice what would happen next. He shall lend to you, and that's what's happened with our debt. We were a lending nation until 1981. Then we became a debtor nation, and it has increased to where just the U.S. government debt alone is $5.3 trillion. Now a good number of American citizens hold that debt, but Japan holds billions, hundreds of billions of dollars of that, and so do the different governments. See? So they lend to us. You shall not lend to him. He shall be the head, and you shall be the tail. So sooner or later, we're going to come down. And the way it is now, with everything set up in the land, we have so many different ethnic groups, and they're allowed to keep their own customs, their own language, to live in their own segregated neighborhoods and all of this sort of thing. One teacher said that she's having a difficult time trying to teach the students in the second or third grade, and that is because there are 67 languages spoken by the kids in this elementary school. So here's the bleak future of America. Sooner or later, all these blessings are going to switch over to curses. It's just a matter of a pendulum, kind of like a seesaw. And we're about the halfway point, and it's going to gradually, more and more strangers coming in, more and more immigrants coming in, more and more jobs are taken by them, and it seems like more and more they get into the public sector, and so they're controlling the government. Verse 45, moreover, all these curses shall come upon you and pursue you and overtake you till you be destroyed, because you hearken not unto the voice of the Lord your God to keep his commandments and his statutes which he commanded you. And they shall be upon you for a sign, for a wonder, and upon your seed forever, because you serve not the Lord your God with joyfulness and with gladness of heart for the abundance of all things. And don't we have that today? We are so full of things, property, houses, cars, gadget, technology, money, wealth, anything your heart could desire. Therefore shall you serve your enemies which the Lord shall send against you. Now, You can send enemies two ways. You can send an army, or you can send immigrants. In hunger, in thirst, in nakedness, in want of all things, and he shall put a yoke of iron upon your neck until he have destroyed you, and the Lord shall bring a nation against you from far, from the end of the earth. Now, this does not sound like what some people said in the past were the Nazis out of Germany. Notice this, from the end of the earth. And fly as the eagle flies, a nation whose tongue you shall not understand. Try Chinese. And are they not fierce? I think it says here, a nation of fierce countenance. I tell you, they're more fierce looking than Germans. And they're threatening right now with no qualms. If you interfere in Taiwan, it's nuclear war, man. And they control the East Gate and the West Gate of the Panama Canal with Chinese corporations right there, plus the naval base down in Long Beach. Part of it is leased out to the Chinese. So they could bring things in here, and we could go just like that any minute. Which shall not regard the person of the old, nor show favor to the young. He shall eat the fruit of your cattle, the fruit of your land, until you be destroyed. Which also shall not leave you either corn, wine, oil, or the increase of your kind, or flocks of your sheep, until he has destroyed you. He shall besiege you in all your gates. Now, this may be a type of the immigration coming on. And aren't they isn't our southern border besieged? And they're sending containers, cargo things on ships to come over here? It's amazing. Your fence walls, and your fence walls wherein you trusted throughout all your land, he shall beseech you in all your gates throughout all your land, which the Lord your God gives you. And so then it goes on showing how really desperate it is going to be. Now let's have a historical lesson here. Let's see what happened to Israel. Now, let's go to 1 Kings, the 8th chapter. 1 Kings 8. 1 Kings chapter 8, let's come toward the end of the chapter, verse 54. Now let's notice what happened here in Solomon's concluding remarks to the prayer of the dedication of the temple. Verse 54, 1 Kings 8. And it was so that when Solomon had made an end of praying all this prayer and supplication unto the Lord, he rose from before the altar of the Lord, from kneeling on his knees with his hands spread toward heaven. And he stood and blessed all the congregation of Israel. At that time, that was all the 12 tribes together. Blessed them with a loud voice, saying, Blessed be the Lord that has given rest unto his people Israel. So they entered into their rest, that is the inheritance of the land, according to all that he promised. Now notice, all that he promised. There has not failed one word of all his good promise, which he promised by the hand of Moses his servant. And the Lord our God be with us, as he was with our fathers. Let him not leave us or forsake us, that he may incline our hearts unto him to walk in all of his ways. Now I want you to notice what he's saying here, because we will see that Solomon ended up doing the opposite. See? Though he commanded all the people to keep his commandments and his statutes and his judgments, which he commanded our fathers. And let these words wherewith I have made supplication before the Lord be near unto the Lord our God day and night, that he maintain the cause of his servant and the cause of his people Israel at all times, as the matter shall require. And all the people of the earth may know that the Lord is God and that there is none else. Let your heart be perfect with the Lord our God, to walk in his statutes and to keep his commandments as at this day. Now let's see what happened to Solomon, you see. And the whole lesson is here. It doesn't matter how you start. It matters how you finish. That's what's important. Remember the parable that Jesus asked the Pharisees? He says, tell me. He said, a man had two sons. He told him to go work in the field. The one said, no, I won't do it. But later he repented and did when it worked. The other one said, yes, I'll do it, and he didn't do it. Question, which one did the will of the Father? The first one. Okay? So likewise here, it's not how you start, it's how you finish. So they started great. Now let's see all the blessings that came as a result of that. Let's come to 2 Chronicles 9. And let's see, much like today, Solomon had a worldwide trading combine. He was not only the wealthiest man in the world, but he was also the wisest. Now let's read what they had here. 2 Chronicles 9 and verse 13. Now the weight of gold that came to Solomon in 1 year was 603 score and 6 talents, and if my memory serves me correct, a talent is 180 pounds. So that's a whale of a lot of gold into today's money. This would come out a whole lot more than it was back then. And besides that, that means besides. Now, this came to him in 1 year. We'll see that it came year by year by year. This was tax. This was tribute. This was trade. They had ships. They had commerce. Let's notice what they did. Besides that, which chapmen and merchants brought, all the kings of Arabia and governors of the country brought gold and silver to Solomon. And King Solomon made 200 targets of beaten gold. 600 shekels of beaten gold went into one target. 300 shields made he of beaten gold. 300 shekels of gold went into one shield. And the king put them in the house of the forest of Lebanon. Now that's where the king lived. So he had his halls lined with these solid gold shields. You imagine walking in to see that? And there's something with human beings when they see gold, they just, something happens. But I want you to notice the wealth. Now, we think we're wealthy, but we have paper and plastic. Okay? Let's notice what happened here. Moreover, the king made a great throne of ivory and overlaid it with pure gold. Now, where does ivory come from? Yes, it does not come from Palestine. See? Okay. And there were 6 steps to the throne with a footstool of gold, and were fastened to the throne, and the stays on each side of the sitting place, and 2 lions standing by the stays. So he would sit there, and right where he would place his hands, right out in front of the arms were 2 big lion heads. Now, there was not the like made in any kingdom. And all the drinking vessels of King Solomon were gold. We live in a styrofoam age. If one of his servants would have brought a styrofoam, he would have had his head removed. Wonder what it would be like to drink out of pure gold. All the vessels of the house of the forest of Lebanon were of pure gold, none of silver. It was too much work to clean up all the tarnish, you know how silver does, see. And it was not anything accounted in the days of Solomon. For the king's ships went to Tarshish with the servants of Huram. Every 3 years once came the ships of Tarshish bringing gold, silver, ivory, apes, and peacocks. That can be from Africa and also Southeast Asia. Now, how long did it take Magellan to go around the world? And his vessel was not that big. Took him 3 years. They knew where to go. There's even in New Mexico, there are Hebrew writings depicting the Ten Commandments written near one of the copper mines that is down in New Mexico to this very day. So they had trading ships that came over here. Now, verse 22. And King Solomon passed all the kings of the earth in riches and wisdom. Now, one thing I've learned, when the Bible says all the earth, it means all the earth. And all the kings of the earth sought the presence of Solomon to hear his wisdom that God had put in his heart. And they brought every man his present, vessels of silver and vessels of gold and raiment and harnesses and spices and horses and mules. Now notice a rate year by year. So he had a trading agreement, and probably part of this was tariffs. And then it shows what he did. Solomon made 4,000 stalls for horses and chariots and 12,000 horsemen, and he bestowed, whom he bestowed in the chariot cities and with the king at Jerusalem. And he reigned over all the kings from the river, that is the east side of the Nile, even unto the Euphrates rather, even unto the land of the Philistines in the border of Egypt. And the king made silver in Jerusalem as stones, and cedar trees made he as sycamore trees that are in the low places in abundance. And they also brought unto Solomon horses out of Egypt and out of all lands. Now, if you want to know what happens when you become so stinking filthy rich you don't know what to do, read the book of Ecclesiastes. Let's go back to 1 Kings, the 11th chapter now. And in reading Ecclesiastes, you'll find that he experimented with everything. He wanted to know what it was like to be a fool, to be drunk. So he did all of those things. I don't know what else he experimented with. But let's look and see what Solomon did to the nation of Israel. Now, he makes Wilhelm Clinton look like a piker. Verse 1. But King Solomon loved many strange women, together with the daughter of Pharaoh, and the women of the Moabites and Ammonites and Edomites and Zidonians and Hittites, of the nations concerning which the Lord said unto the children of Israel, you shall not go into them, neither shall they come in unto you, for they shall surely turn your heart away after their gods. And Solomon clave to these in love. I don't know how he did it, but someone commented that he must have originated vitamin pills. Verse 3, now notice what he had. He had 700 wives. Now, would you like to try and manage that household? Princesses, 300 concubines. And his wives turned away his heart. So he brought upon him the curse of Adam by listening to the voice of his wives. And it came to pass when Solomon was old that his wives turned away his heart after other gods, and his heart was not perfect with the Lord his God, as was the heart of David his father. And Solomon went after. Now notice, compare that with his words that he gave in his prayer. He turned around and went completely the other way. He went after. That means he chose to do so. After Ashtaroth, the goddess of the Zidonians. Now, Ashtaroth is the female goddess that came from Semiramis, which today is more notably Mary worship. And after Milcom, the abomination of the Ammonites. Now, Milcom was the Ammonites' version of Nimrod. So here we have Nimrod and Semiramis. Okay. And what days did they worship on? Sunday. You know, like in the study I gave, why Israel went into captivity was because of Sunday worship. Most people don't know that. Verse 6. And Solomon did evil in the sight of the Lord, and went not fully after the Lord as did David his father. Then Solomon did build a high place for Chemosh, the abomination of Moab, in the hill which is before Jerusalem, that is just across from the temple of God. And for Moloch, the abomination of the children of Ammon. So after he built the temple of God, then he went into the temple building business, building him for all of the gods that God said don't do. Now notice, and likewise, here's how he kept family peace. He sinned. Likewise did he for all of his strange wife, which burned incense and sacrificed unto their gods. Now, what do you think the general population thought of that? You do as the king does. If the king goes after all of these strange gods, it's okay for you to do it. After all, he's the king, right? And didn't we find the same thing today? When our president did the things that he did, they have noticed there's been a steep decline in morality because the population mimics the leaders. So this is what he did. And actually, when you come to understand it, which we'll see in just a little bit, he Babylonianized Israel. So a person from the outside looking in could look at Israel at that time and say, I just came from Babylon, and this is just like Babylon. Look at all of these churches and all of these altars and all of these incense centers. No wonder all the children of Israel built the high places on the hills and burned incense and things like that on the hills, you see? And that is what happened. And we'll see here that Solomon did not repent. Now, what his status is with God, I don't know, because God is judge. But notice this. And the Lord was angry with Solomon because his heart was turned from the Lord God of Israel, which had appeared unto him twice, and commanded him concerning this thing, that he should not go after other gods, but he kept not that which the Lord commanded. Wherefore the Lord said to Solomon, for as much as this is done of you, and you have not kept my covenant and my statutes which I commanded you, I will surely rend the kingdom from you and give it to your servant. Now, that's the worst thing a king could ever hear, because a servant was, you know, one who had his fidelity and allegiance to the king. Notwithstanding, in your days I will not do it for David your father's sake, but I will rend it out of the hand of your son. Howbeit, I will not rend away all the kingdom, but I will give one tribe to your son for David my servant's sake. That's the tribe of Judah. And then the Levites came with him, and part of Benjamin, for Jerusalem's sake, which I have chosen. Now then, let's come over here and see the result of it. Jeroboam was the servant, and God told Jeroboam through the prophet Abijah that if he would follow God's ways and commands, that he would build a house for him just like David. In other words, a perpetual dynasty. Well, Jeroboam didn't do that. Let's see what he did. He had a ready-made, already mostly Babylonianized population in Israel. So now he's got the majority, the 10 tribes. Later, about 200 and some years later, they were carried off into captivity because of their sins. But let's notice what was done here. Let's come to 1 Kings 12. Let's pick it up in verse 25. Here's what he did. Then Jeroboam built Shechem in Mount Ephraim and dwelt there, and went out from there and built Penuel. And Jeroboam said in his heart, so you see, now instead of relying on God, he relied on his own thinking. Now shall the kingdom return to the house of David. If this people go up to do sacrifice in the house of the Lord at Jerusalem, then shall the heart of this people turn again unto their Lord, even to Rehoboam, king of Judah. And they shall kill me and go again to Rehoboam, king of Judah. Whereupon the king took counsel. Now, whenever there is something to be done with religion and government together, and that's what's going to happen in the end time, government and religion are going to get together. We'll see that in just a bit. Now here he's the head of state. So here's what he did. Whereupon the king took counsel. So he had his cabinet and he got bad advice. Not one of them said, trust the Lord. And made two calves of gold. Now these are the calves like they have in Egypt. And they have the horns that come up like this, with a round sun disc placed in between. So this was Baal worship, Sunday worship, Ashtaroth worship. Now, at this point, here's what you call a paradigm shift. Now, a paradigm shift is when you are ready to radically change values. Now, America is just about at that point today. the beginning of the 20th century, the Supreme Court ruled and said that we were a Christian nation. At the end of the 20th century, they say that we are a pluralist society with diversity. Meaning we have gone from following the precepts of God to following the precepts of Babylon. And it's been done by all the immigration coming in. Same thing here. He made two calves of gold and said to them, I'm going to be good to you. I'm going to make it convenient for you. It's too much for you to go up to Jerusalem. That's a long way to go. Let's have it closer. Behold your gods, O Israel, which brought you up out of the land of Egypt. So he could hearken back to the time when they made the golden calf. Can you imagine this was some 480 years later that they hearkened back to the golden calf that the children of Israel made at the foot of Mount Sinai? And he set one in Bethel. Now that is close to where Samaria is. That would be the southern part of the 10 tribes. And put the other in Dan, which is northern part. And this thing became a sin, for the people went to worship before the one, even unto Dan. And he made a house of the high places and made priest of the lowest of the people, which were not of the sons of Levi. And here's what he did. Jeroboam ordained a feast in the 8th month. On the 15th day of the month, like unto the feast that is in Judah, and offered upon the altar. So he was the titular high priest as well. And he probably told him, look, it's too far to go to Jerusalem, and we're going to have this 30 days later. And the 8th month will be more convenient because all the crops will be sure to be in at that time. And you can use all the human reasoning you want, see. Okay, so then he offered the incense. So did he in Bethel, sacrificing under the calves that he had made, and placed in Bethel the priests of the high places which he had made. And he offered upon the altar which he had made in Bethel on the 15th day of the 8th month, even in the month which he had devised of his own heart, and ordained a feast unto the children of Israel, and offered upon the altar and burned incense. How about that? Well, 200 and some years later, they were all sent off into captivity because of their sins. Now then, let's come forward to our day. Let's come to the book of Revelation and let's see how the world is in a position now for a paradigm shift. See, after the 10 tribes split off, Rehoboam completed the paradigm shift and made the 10 northern tribes totally Babylonian in practice, though they were the children of Israel. So likewise in the world today, religion is going to play a key part in the coming political events. And that's why the Pope is over in the Holy Land. Who is he seeing? He's seeing the religious leaders and the political leaders, correct? Only now, this Babylon spoken of in Revelation 17 is not a country of Babylon, but the whole world system. Now, if you don't have the tape, the beast that was and is not and yet is, I show conclusively that that has to be, in the end time, the United Nations. Now, we're going to see here in Revelation 17, let's begin in verse 1. And there came one of the angels, which had the 7 vials, and talked with me, saying unto me, come here, and I will show you the judgment of the great whore that sits upon many waters. Now that makes a Catholic church mad, because the Protestants have said that for hundreds of years. Because the Catholic church considers that they are the women of Revelation 12, and that the son to be born is the coming Christ, which will come through the Catholic Church, but who will not be the real Christ coming from heaven, but the Antichrist coming from the earth. Now she sits upon many waters. Let's come down here to verse 15 and see the explanation of that. And he said unto me, the waters where you saw where the whore sits are peoples, multitudes, nations, and tongues. Now there's only one man in the world which has that kind of influence, and that is the Pope. Now, let's come down here to verse 18. And the woman which you saw is that great city which reigns over the kings of the earth. And they do. They have diplomatic relations with almost every country in the whole world. The only other organization similar to that is the United Nations. Now, what is going to happen? The United Nations is divided down into, divided the world down into 10 regions. And in each one of those regions will come one of the kings. They will end up fighting Christ. Those are the 10 horns. The 7 heads will be an expansion of the Security Council of the UN from 5 permanent members to 7 permanent members, perhaps adding Japan and Germany in addition to the ones that are already on there, and that way you will have 7 and 10. So you get that tape, the beast that was and is not and yet is, and I explained that. Now let's come back here to verse 2. Revelation 17 and verse 2. Now look what happens when you get the wrong religion. And of course, you know, God hates religion anyway because his way is a way of life. But I use that because that's a term people understand. With whom the kings of the earth have committed fornication. Isn't it interesting? What did Solomon do with all of his wives? The same thing. They turned him from God, didn't they? Okay, so this is the whore with spiritual fornication. Now notice, and the inhabitants of the earth, now that means the whole earth, have been made with the drunk of the wine of her fornication. Now what happens when you're drunk? You don't have judgment. And another thing happens when you're drunk. You don't want to hear the truth. You want to hear someone coming up and saying, you're drunk? No, I'm not. I'm perfectly capable of taking care of myself. I can drive this car backwards, standing on my head. Okay? Meaning that there's a lack of judgment. And there is a lack of judgment in people today. Now, let me just give you one example. George W. Bush went down to Bob Jones University to bring a campaign speech. One of the Catholic representatives from New York leaped upon this occasion and castigated him for going there for two things. One, because he wouldn't allow interracial dating. And two, which is the most important, that they teach that the Roman Catholic Church is the whore of Revelation 17 and is Satan's instrumentality in the world. Now, rather than asking what the truth is and why they believe that or whether it was so, what happened? Why? He's anti-Catholic. See? People are interested in their positions. They're not interested in truth. Why? Because they've all drunk of the wine of her fornication. Now then, you take not only just the Catholics, but expand that out. But the Catholics are becoming Babylonianized even more. And all the religions of the world are coming home to mama. We'll see that here in just a minute. So he carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness, verse 3, and I saw a woman sit upon a scarlet-colored beast. The woman controlling politics. And that is so in every pagan nation. Full of the names of blasphemy, having 7 heads and 10 horns. And the woman was arrayed in purple and scarlet color and decked with gold and precious stones and pearls, and having a golden cup in her hand full of abominations and the filthiness of her fornication. And upon her forehead was a name written, Mystery Babylon the Great. So this is going to be for the whole world, Babylon the Great. Because all the inhabitants have been made drunk with the wine of her fornication. Okay? And the mother of harlots. And the harlots are all the Babylonian religions, which is Judaism, Hinduism, Muslimism, Buddhism, all of the animal religions of Africa, and more lately, Protestantism. Now, what happened was, when the Reformation took place, all of the Protestants said, yep, this is Rome. They had that right. The Sabbath keepers come along and say, yes, that's Rome, and the harlots, all the Protestant churches. That's not quite correct. One of the harlots could represent the Protestant churches, but all the rest represent the rest of the religions of the world out of Great Babylon. Okay? Now, let's see how this develops in Revelation 13. Because there's some very important things here in Revelation 13 that we need to look to, that we need to understand, and see what's going to happen. Let's, first of all, in Revelation 13, it starts out with the political world government, and then develops into the person of the Antichrist. And we will notice in this one again that it's a combination of all of the prophecies of Daniel 7, all combined in the great last Babylonian one world society. That's why it's called globalism. Okay. Verse 1. I stood on the sand of the sea, the sea being people, waters as we saw, so it's coming from all peoples, and saw a beast rise up out of the sea. Now, you know, 1947, all of a sudden we have what? The United Nations. It tried to come up in the 20s, the League of Nations, but they couldn't get America to go in with it. But Second World War convinced Americans to do it. And they had, before they even met, they had the whole outline of the Constitution of the United Nations. They had the General Assembly. They had the Security Council. They had everything all ready to go. Rose up out of the sea, having seven heads and ten horns, again a sign of Satan. And upon his horns, ten crowns, and upon his heads, the name of blasphemy. And the beast which I saw was like a leopard. So that comes out of the Grecian Empire. And his feet were the feet of a bear. That's out of the Persian Empire. And his mouth, the mouth of a lion. And the dragon gave him his power, his throne, and great authority. Now, what did Satan tell Christ in the temptation in Luke 4 and Matthew 4? Let's turn this tape to the other side, please. He told Christ that if you will worship me, I will give you all the kingdoms of the world and the power and glory of them, for it's mine to give unto you. Now then, notice what happens here. And I saw one of his heads, as it were, wounded to death, and his deadly wound was healed. Now, the Seventh-day Adventists say this is the Pope who had the assassination but came back. There are other people who applied this to Ronald Reagan when he was in office because the attempted assassination came, and so, you know, they figured that he was the beast. Well, no, he wasn't the beast. Not by any shot. Okay. Deadly wound was healed, and all the world wondered after the beast. So this man has yet to come on the scene. We don't know who he is, but when he comes on the scene, we will recognize him. This will be the dictator of the whole world. Now, he won't come on as a dictator at first, because the book of Daniel shows that there's going to be 7 years of his reign. 3.5 years is going to be peace and prosperity. Then there is going to be the deadly wound which will take place and be healed. And notice what happens. All the world wondered after the beast, and they worshiped the dragon, who is Satan the devil, which gave power unto the beast. And this is what we are seeing develop right now. It will become a completely occult society. And the whole society is being set up for this, beginning by teaching the children in the lowest grades in public school all about spiritism and the occult. Fostered then by all of the cartoons and entertainment for children, promulgated at a high level by Disney, and you watch all the programs that you see on television, how much is involved in superstition and witchcraft and evil and everything like that. The world is being programmed for it. Now, when they worship the dragon, that's going to be when Satan comes out, and he then is worshipped as Lucifer, the light bringer. Now, notice what happens. Which gave power to the beast. And they worship the beast. So you see, Satan is going to be worshipped, but they won't see him because he's invisible. So he has to have the visible man of the beast. And he will come. Saying, who is like unto the beast and who is able to make war with him? Now picture this scenario. The Secretary General of the United Nations, may perhaps be the one who will be the beast. And all the nations sign an agreement to bring peace, to turn all nuclear weapons over to the control of the United Nations. Who is able to make war against the beast? Now, that's not a stretch of the imagination by any means. I think that we will probably see that will happen. Now, let's look a little bit about this man. Let's hold your place here and go back to Daniel, the 8th chapter, and let's see the prophecy of it there. This is going to be some man with power, greater power than any man. He is going to have sway over people in such a way that has never been seen before in all the history of the world. He's going to be wise. He's going to be dynamic. He is going to be powerful. He is going to be magnetic. He is going to be able to make other nations all of a sudden get along with each other in a way that has never been done before. Now, here in Daniel, the 8th chapter, we have the prophecy of it. Let's begin here in verse 17. So he came near where I stood, that is the angel Gabriel. And when he came, I was afraid and fell on my face, but he said unto me, understand, O son of man, for at the time of the end shall be the vision. Now as he was speaking with me, I was in a deep sleep on my face toward the ground. That's why Joseph Smith, I'll just interject here, anyone who falls on their back and looks up, they are worshiping Satan. And Joseph Smith, who founded supposedly the Mormon Church, fell on his back when God supposedly talked to him. Which means that was a lying vision. I've had to explain that to Mormons, ex-Mormons, over and over again. Okay? Whenever you worship God, you're always on your face. And he touched me and set me upright. And he said, behold, I will make you know what shall be the last end of the indignation, for at the time appointed the end shall be. And of course, God knows that time. The ram which you saw having two horns are the kings of Media and Persia. Now, I want you to take special note of the two horns. The two horns here represent two kings, correct? We'll come back to two horns a little later on in Revelation 13. The rough goat is the king of Grecia, or Greece, and the great horn that is between his eyes is the first king, or the great king being Alexander the Great. And right at the height of his empire, he was cut off and died. Now, what happened then? Verse 22. Now, that being broken, whereas four stood up in four kingdoms. and shall stand up out of the nation, but not in his power. That's exactly what happened. It split up into two four regions. Now, verse 23 is the key. In the latter time of their kingdom, when the transgressors are come to the full. Now, notice the qualifications here. Time when the whole earth is filled with sin. And there is going to be no time like it, like the occult society that we are now entering into and the world is going to be practicing. A king of fierce countenance and understanding dark sentences shall stand up. And his power shall be mighty, but not by his own power, because we saw back there in Revelation 13, Satan gave him the power. And he shall destroy awesomely, as a convincing show of his power, and shall prosper in practice and destroy the mighty and holy people. We'll see that in just a minute in Revelation 13. He will kill the saints of God. And through his policy also, he shall cause craft to prosper. Now, craft then is the spiritism and witchcraft. And he shall magnify himself in his heart. Now we'll see how he lifts himself up. And by peace shall destroy many, and he also shall stand up against the prince of princes, but he shall be broken without hand. Now there's only one leader of the world to stand up against Christ and fight, and that is the beast. Then we will see the false prophet does too. Both of them are cut off without hand. That means without human hand. Angels take them and cast them into the lake of fire, Revelation 19. Now, let's come back to Revelation 13. Revelation 13, and let's finish it up here. Let's see how this man exalts himself. And there was given unto him a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies. And power was given to him to continue 42 months. That is, after the deadly wound was healed. And notice what he does. Verse 6. And he opened his mouth in blasphemy against God to blaspheme his name and his tabernacle and them that dwell in heaven. Now, never have we had a man stand up and do that. And it was given unto him to make war with the saints and to overcome them. And so that's when true Christianity is going to be outlawed. That is when the martyrdom of the saints will occur again. Now, how far down the road that is, we don't know. But we know we're getting closer and closer and closer to it. Now, notice. And power was given him over all kindreds and tongues and nations, and all that dwell upon the earth shall worship him. So this is going to be some man. There has never been a political leader who has been accepted as God. But you see, the religions of the world will have to endorse him as God, or the Christ. Now notice, the ones who do so, whose names are not written in the book of life of the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world, if any man have an ear, let him hear. That means you better pay attention. When God says, let anyone has an ear, let him hear, that means you better pay attention to what's being said, and moreover, it's difficult to understand, so you better really pay great attention to it. Now let's come to 2 Thessalonians, the second chapter, and let's see what Paul said about this man who was coming out of the system, this great Babylonian system which is going to take place. Let's just begin in verse 1. Now we beseech you, brethren, by the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ, and by our gathering together unto him, so this is the true coming, the true Christ, that you be not soon shaken in mind, nor be troubled, neither by spirit, nor by word, which means message, nor by letter or epistle, as from us, is that the day of Christ is at hand. Because remember what Christ said? There shall arise false Christ and false prophets, and they'll say, lo, he's in the desert, so don't go forth. Lo, he's in the secret chamber. Don't believe it. Verse 3. Let no man deceive you by any means, for that day shall not come except. Now I'm going to read it the way it should be translated from the Greek. Except there shall have come a falling away first, or apostasy. Now there are two aspects to this apostasy. One is within the church of God, and we've seen that happen. Two is within the world, leaving even the things of God that they had and going into accepting all of the occultism of Satan. So that the whole world is going to abandon anything concerning the true God and accept Satan as their God. Shall have come first. Now it's in operation of coming. When it is fait accompli, then the next thing is going to happen. Notice. And that man of sin be revealed, the son of perdition. And that means shall have been revealed. So it's going to be known. Those who are in the church of God and have the Spirit of God and understand the Word of God will know. The world won't. Now notice his character. How that fits right in with Revelation 13 and Daniel 8. Who opposes and exalts himself above all that is called God, or that is worshipped, so that he, as God, sitting in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. Now this tells us something else has to happen too. There has to be a temple built in Jerusalem by the Jews. And you know the Jews are going to sign no peace pact without a guarantee of being able to build a temple. And when they start building the temple, know the time is short. Now, let's come down here. Come down here to verse 8. And then shall that wicked one be revealed, whom the Lord shall consume with the spirit of his mouth and shall destroy with the brightness of his coming. Even him whose coming is after the working of Satan, that is this man of sin, the son of perdition, with all power and signs and lying wonders, and with all deceivableness of unrighteousness in them that perish. He's going to make Slick Willie look like kindergarten. Because they received not the love of the truth that they might be saved. And that's where people are today. They don't love the truth. They don't want the truth. They don't want to hear the truth. All they want to do is get along and go along. I'm okay. You're okay. You accept me. I accept you. Your religion is just fine. It's the same as mine. And therefore, true Christianity, all forms of Christianity are brought down. The only one that is going to stay above it is true Christianity, because they won't believe it. There is only one God who sent his only son, and he spoke to the world, which we have recorded here, and he is the Christ. No one else. No other prophet from any religion has anything to do with Christ. They are all of Satan the devil. That is the truth, but people don't love the truth. And when people don't love the truth, something else happens. Notice. Verse 11. For this cause, or because of this, God shall send upon them strong delusion that they should believe a lie, that they all might be damned who believed not the truth, but had pleasure in unrighteousness. They enjoyed all the occult. They enjoyed all of these things. And so they are going to get their man. Now let's come back to Revelation 13. Let's pick it up here in verse 11. Revelation 13 and verse 11. And I beheld another beast coming up out of the earth. I want you to mark, coming up out of the earth. Okay? And he had two horns. I want you to mark the two horns. Like a lamb, and he spoke as a dragon. And he exercised all the power of the first beast. What power did the first beast have? Over all the world as the civil ruler. Now we have the religion coming along, which has the same power. In other words, this is the one world religion which they are working on to bring into the world. And in order to do that, they have to make all religions agree on common ground. And all this ecumenical movement which has been going on since Vatican II in the 1960s, they are bringing not just Protestants and Catholics together, they are bringing all religions together. All of them. And even the Pope has declared you can believe in evolution as long as you believe that God created the soul. Now, let's go on. And causes the earth and them which dwell therein to worship the first beast. They are going to authorize worship to this man as the Christ, whose deadly wound was healed. And he does great wonders so that he makes fire come down from heaven on earth in the sight of men. And that's going to be the real thing. It's not going to be some technological gimmick that's going to happen, because we are too technologicized today that we won't put up with any makeshift nonsense of a delusion. It's going to be the real thing. And deceives them that dwell on the earth, because they didn't love the truth, remember? By the means of those miracles which he had power to do in the sight of the beast, saying to them that dwell on the earth, that they should make an image to the beast, or it should read for the beast, which had the wound by a sword and did live. Now, if you don't have the tape, the image for the beast, you write in for that, because the image for the beast is always the goddess figure. Verse 15, he had power to give life unto the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak and cause as many as would not worship the image of the beast should be killed. So that's when the dividing line comes. Now then, let's read the next part. Then we'll go back and analyze these verses one by one. And he causes all, that means everyone, on the earth, both small and great, rich and poor, free and bond, to receive a mark in their right hand or in their foreheads. And the Greek means upon, epi, put upon. Now you watch the Babylon 5 television program, they have it right there on their right hand and in their forehead. Same way with Star Trek. And all the little kiddies watch that, and so they're all programmed into receiving it. And people are going to flock to the mark of the beast, especially from the benefits that they will receive. That no man might buy or sell save he that had the mark, or the name of the beast, or the number of his name, so all three will probably be right on that chip. Here is wisdom. Let him that has understanding count the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man, and his number is 666. And this beast is referring, that 666 is referring to the second beast in Revelation 13. And the Seventh-day Adventists have done a very good job in showing how 666666666 all the way through the whole papal system. Now let me read you some things here, which are very interesting. Let's go back to verse 11 again. The beast comes up out of the earth. Now let me read you this from the New American Magazine, December 6th, 1999 edition. The 1999 Parliament of the World's Religions, beginning on January 1st and running until, December 1st, until December 8th, the 1999 Parliament of World Religions will convene in Cape Town, South Africa, like its predecessor in 1993. And I brought during the Feast of Tabernacles that year a couple of sermons on the on what was going to happen with the Parliament of World's Religions. And I was predicting this very thing that we're seeing happening right now, and they have been busy working on it and doing it. This year's Parliament will bring together practitioners and experts from various sundries exotic faiths, including Wiccans, now that's witches or witchcraft, male and female, Scientology, now that is New Age, Zoroastrians, that's fire and sun worship, and Theosophists, which then are spirits, spiritists, in other words, occultists, like Alice Bailey. To discuss the role of religion in modern society and to continue to hammer out a new one world religion. Great steps toward that goal were taken in 1993. The key speaker at that year's confab, physicist Gerald Ol Barney, told the assembly that a new religion must be created, a substantial faith tradition on earth. Now notice how all religions began talking about tradition, tradition, tradition. Even the churches of God. Remember that? When the apostasy was occurring within the church of God, what happened? They said tradition. Passover is our tradition. No, it's God's command. You see, but that's what they did. Faith tradition on earth. A faith such that if everyone adopted and followed it, we would be assured a sustainable, just and humane future for earth and her people. In his view, Christianity is an outdated anachronism that is not sustainable. Well, true Christianity is because it's eternity. Now, the rush to create a universal faith that is earth-based. Where did the second beast come from? From the earth. I mean, are the prophecies real or not? An earth-based and sustainable will continue with the 1999 gathering. There, according to the conferee's accompanying document, a call to our guiding institutions, which is to all church institutions and to all government institutions, conferees will be invited to, among other things, to create a modern golden calf by providing leadership to assure the earth is respected and revered and protected. Allah Rehoboam. So the whole world will be Babylonianized. The creation of the new sustainable earth-centered faith will be accompanied by the destruction of other supposedly unsustainable social structures. For instance, market economies would be phased out so as to move beyond our narrow self-interests. Communism. We are already communists, but just don't know it. Because economic power should be wielded in the service of economic justice and the common wealth. Okay? Now, that's what the Pope says. Oh, you rich people, why don't you give the money to the poor countries? See? Further, sovereign states and their attendant nationalistic tendencies would be replaced by the global village. Thank you, Hillary. We must work toward a profound affirmation of global interdependence. You must work by committee, and that's what communism is. Dictatorship by committee. That's why the stinking thinking, remember the tapes I did on stinking thinking, group thinking, that they teach it in the schools? Everything is group, 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 group. No one is responsible for himself. No one is taught independence. No. Interdependence. Moving beyond the present model of tenuously balanced power among nation states toward a model of robust cooperation within the human family. Doesn't that sound good? Giving the keynote address at this year's confab will be the Dalai Lama. Remember, the last update I did showed a picture of the Pope and the Dalai Lama working together. So, the two horns. I won't ring my cowbell this time because I'm pretty well convinced that that is probably true. One horn represents the Dalai Lama who's bringing the East to the West, and the other horn represents the Pope who's bringing the West to the East. Also speaking on behalf of this agenda is liberal Catholic theologian Hans Küng, whose fame is due to his staunch opposition to traditional Catholic teaching on such issues as ordination of women, married male priest, and birth control. Now, it doesn't look like this Pope is going to make it. Currently, he's on a trip in the Holy Land, and I hope he doesn't die there, because you can almost write the script. Oh, the Pope went on his sacred pilgrimage and came home to rest in the Holy Land.
Yeah.
Now, other speakers were Arlo Guntree, actress Goldie Hawn, a full slate of Hindus, Buddhists, and New Age practitioners. Isn't that amazing? Here's a magazine, this week's Newsweek, Visions of Jesus. Let's look at the title of it. The Other Jesus. Showing that all the major religions of the world accept a version of Jesus which fits into their scheme. So when the beast comes on the scene and he is called the Christ, the New Agers will accept him as Lord Maitreya. The Catholics will accept him as Christ. The Jews will accept him as Messiah. The Muslims will accept him as the great Imam. And the Buddhists will accept him as the reincarnation of Buddha, and the Hindus will accept him as the manifestation of Vishnu. So that's why the picture of him here looks like some hippie just coming off some sort of drug trip.
Very effeminate.
And I said before, they are going to create a whole one-world Bible by taking parts of the Bible, taking parts of the so-called, what, other religions believe that sacred scriptures are no more sacred than demons, because that's what they are, all demon-inspired, and make a new world Bible. Okay, let's go to 2 Corinthians 11. Paul had the same problem with those in Corinth. Verse 3, 2 Corinthians 11. But I fear, lest by any means as a serpent, who is Satan the devil, beguiled Eve through his subtleties, that is his deceivableness, so your mind should be corrupted from the simplicity that is in Christ. For if he that comes preaching another Jesus, and that's what the title of this article is, the other Jesus, whom we have not preached, or if you receive another spirit, which you have not received, or another gospel, which you have not accepted, you might well bear with him. Now, this really means you count it as wonderful. And this is what they are doing with the now all of the propaganda in the news magazines to go ahead and bring an acceptance of combining a one-world religion, like they said in this previous article, an earth-based religion. Now, this is written by Kenneth L. Woodward. Caption: to Christians, he's the Son of God. But the world's other great religions have their own visions of a legendary figure, meaning they all have prophecies of a Christ. Ever since his election, John Paul II has wanted one thing: to walk where Jesus walked, preach where Jesus taught and prayed, where Jesus was crucified, died, and was buried. This week, the Pope finally gets his chance. And I remember the picture of him standing on Mount Nebo and looking out and seeing all the Holy Land. And my wife said, how blasphemous that is for him to be doing that. But weary in body, but ecstatic in spirit, John Paul makes his long-anticipated pilgrimage to the Holy Land. For him, it is a personal journey with God. There will be no intruding television cameras when he is lost in prayer, communes, and communes alone at Christianity's holiest shrines. Well, those are all paganized shrines with idols. But the land of his heart's desire is holy to Jews and Muslims as well. And so the Pope will visit the Western Wall, Judaism most sacred site, the Mosque of El Aqsa, which then is the Mosque of Omar, upon the Temple Mount. He will also meet with Muslim and Jewish religious leaders, and one particularly resonant moment, he will pause to pray at the Yad Vashem, Israel's memorial to the victims of the Holocaust. Like his powerful plea for forgiveness a fortnight ago, the trip is also an exercise in religious reconciliation. More than 90 times since he took office, John Paul has acknowledged past faults of the church and begged pardon from others, Muslims and Jews, as well as Protestant and Catholic Christians, for sins committed in the name of Catholicism. Well, you see, there's been one exercise in killing people. There's another story I read where over 100 million people were killed by the Inquisitions of Catholicism. However, the sound of a one-hand clap. Now, if you have a one-hand clap, you can't hear anything. However, his efforts have brought few echoing responses. Now at the high point of this Jubilee year for the church, he comes to Jerusalem, the city of peace, hoping to erect bridges among the three monotheistic faiths. There are, of course, important commonalities among the three religious traditions. See, it isn't how you truly worship the true God, but religious traditions. This is how they're going to get all sucked into this. All three believe in one God, who has revealed his will through sacred scriptures. They all look to an end time when God's justice and power will triumph. They all recognize the figure of Abraham as a father in the faith, which is often overlooked. However, in another figure common to the three traditions, Jesus of Nazareth. Christ of the Gospels is certainly the best known Jesus in the world. For Christians, he's utterly unique, the only Son of God, and as the Pope puts it, is the one mediator between God and humanity, but he really likes to put Mary as a mediatrix there ahead of Christ. But alongside this Jesus is another, the Jesus whom the Muslims since Muhammad have regarded as a prophet and a messenger of Allah. And after centuries of silence about Jesus, many Jews now find him a Jewish teacher and reformer they can now accept on their own terms as one of us. Jesus has become a familiar, even beloved figure among the adherents of Asian religions as well. Among many contemporary Hindus, Jesus has come to be revered as the self-realized saint, who reached the highest level of God consciousness, that is, through incarnation. In recent years, Buddhists like the Dalai Lama have recognized in Jesus a figure of great compassion, much like Buddha. I think as the world grows smaller, Jesus as a figure will grow larger, says Protestant theologian John Cobb, a veteran of interfaith dialogues. Perhaps. Each of these traditions, Judaism, Islam, Buddhism, Hinduism, is rich in its own right, and each has its own integrity, as the Pope calls for better understanding. Among the world's great religions, it's important to recognize that non-Christian faiths have their own visions of the sacred and their own view of Jesus. So when the beast comes on the scene, there it is. He will be accepted by all. Well, even most of the Christian religions now say that all these other religions are all going to the same place. They're all going to heaven. Even Judaism says that. Now let's come back and examine the mark of the beast. As I have said, as we've gone through this and watched it through the years, it's going to be more than buying and selling. It is going to actually be giving up your free moral agency. Now here, this was 12/17/99, and it's the lead article is World's First Satellite, Tracked Human Implant Device. Now see, they have GPS, which is Global Positioning System. Palm Beach, Florida, Applied Digital Solutions, ADS, today announced it has acquired the patent rights to a miniature digital transceiver. And as I have said, it's not just to buy and sell, but this transceiver is to send and to receive. This transceiver, which has the name Digital Angel, can be used for a variety of purposes. Now they're going to say it's all good. Just like Satan told Eve, the tree is pleasant. It's good. Such as providing tamper-proof means of identification for enhanced email security, locating lost or missing individuals, tracking the location of valuable property, and monitoring the medical conditions of at-risk patients. In the agreement signed last week, ADS acquired the right to develop this unique product itself for all its applications and to sublicense the development of specific applications to other business entities. A special technological group has been formed within ADS to supervise the development of this device. The implantable transceiver sends and receives data and can be continuously tracked by the GPS technology. The transceiver power supply and actuation system are unlike anything ever created. When implanted within the body, the device is powered mechanically, through the movement of muscles, and it can be activated either by the wearer or by the monitoring facility. Remember the ELF project, where they can send these low frequency radio beams all across the United States? Now you put in one of these devices, and bingo, you can control them. A novel sensation feedback feature will even allow the wearer to control the device to some degree. The smart device is also small enough to be hidden inconspicuously on or within valuable personal belongings and priceless artworks. The chairman of ADS quoted, "We believe its potential for improving individual and email security and enhancing the quality of life for millions of people is virtually limitless. Although we're in the early development phase, we expect to come forward with applications in many different areas, from medical monitoring to law enforcement. However, in keeping with the core of our business strengths, we want to go with the e-commerce." Now, let me read you this. This is a follow-up here, Monday, March 20th, 2000, by David Koplian, the World Net Daily Exclusive Commentary. Revelation about digital angels. Then he quotes here Revelation 13 about causes all. "I've always wondered about this passage in the book of Revelation, how people would ever be made to accept such a mark of the beast or to accept the implantation of some sinister chip into their bodies. It sounded like science fiction. If and when such a terrifying future scenario would begin to unfold, I figured, when the Antichrist and all of his operatives would try to mandate the mass acceptance of this mark, there would be massive rebellion. Everyone would just say, 'Hey, dude, didn't you ever hear of a little thing called the Bible, the Book of Revelation? So get out of my face, because I'm not interested in obtaining eternal damnation. Have a nice day.' Ah, that was then. Little did I know the day would come when traditional Christianity would be under such severe assault, its basic precepts so maligned, its adherents so demonized, that the nightmarish scenario predicted in Revelation could not only come about, but be welcomed with open arms." Now continuing on with his commentary, "Little did I know that the once super secret echelon surveillance network would be capable of monitoring any email and phone conversation anywhere on earth. They can do that. They can monitor every transaction with a credit card. Everything is monitored by the National Security Administration. And that soon people's location would be trackable through their cell phones or pagers. And now here comes the Digital Angel, the new dime-size implantable transceiver, whose manufacturer, the NASDAQ-traded Applied Digital Solution, intends its global use for tracking and monitoring of human beings, emitting a homing beacon that can be tracked by global positioning system satellites. It is being marketed as the ultimate tamper-proof means of personal identification. When implanted in your body, the device is powered electromechanically through the movement of muscles, and it can be activated either by the wearer or by the monitoring facility, meaning that if they want to put a thought in all people's mind at one time, bingo, they can do it. Now, continuing on. A few years ago, there may have been resistance, but not anymore, says Dr. Peter Shao, chief scientist for the development of the implant and president of ADS subsidiary, Digital Angel Incorporated. And they told Daily Net News commentary, people are getting used to having implants. New century, new trend. In a spine-tingling comment on mankind's future, Chow added, we will be a hybrid of electronic intelligence and our own soul. Now, I'm not claiming that Digital Angel is the tool of the Antichrist, but I am saying emphatically that if it is, the world is just about ready for it. And I will say it probably is. Now, the first ones out may not be the final ones because they will improve them. But as we can see, the mark of the beast is coming. The one world religion is coming. The one world government is coming. And you watch these things, as Christ said, that you are counted worthy to escape and stand before the Son of Man.
The overseas offices are Canada, Post Office Box 125, Brockville, Ontario, Postal Code K6V5V2. For Australia, Biblical Truth Ministries, GPO Box 1574, Sydney 2001. New Zealand, Post Office Box 242, Waihai, Waihi 2981. Republic of South Africa, Post Office Box 2624, Wilrow, Wilro Park, Postal Code 1731. United Kingdom, Post Office Box 8224, Whittam, Postal Code CM81WZ, United Kingdom.